The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
I was waiting for the chance, but it there it is. All right, everybody, we are live. We got a doubleheader again tomorrow. Early doubleheader with that. We got UFC Vegas 41, headlined by a light heavyweight bout between Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa. Bellator will bounce around. Fedor Emelianenko's return, taking on Timothy Johnson. We're going to talk mostly about the UFC card. We'll dabble in the Bellator card if you would like. But mostly this is the Vettori versus Costa preview show live on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. I am Mike Heck. Thank you for joining us on this Friday, the day before this event. We are actually less than 24 hours away from this thing kicking off. 1 p.m. Eastern prelim start time for this event. And it's needed because now there's 14 fights on this card. We didn't think there'd be 14 fights on this card, but there are 14 fights on this card. Joining me, the Prince of Positivity, Mr. Alexander K. Lee, my best friend.
I'm so happy. I'm so positive. Not one miss, not one cancellation. I mean, they saved two fights somehow this week that looked like they were going to get removed from the card, but even Jonathan Martinez is still competing. So I'm very excited. I'm very happy for all the fighters also who signed on and will get to fight, even though we had some screwy circumstances, to say the least.
Yes, we will get into those screwy circumstances because I feel that the man with the baddest mustache in MMA media will have a fiery hot take in regard to the situation. E. Casey Lydon, how are you, my friend?
Go Astros.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a rough day.
I agree.
It's Sprouts, man. That's good. Maybe the best
team
wins.
Yes. And you know what? I hope there's a game seven tomorrow because the MMA will be over and we can just relax and watch game seven as sports fans, as Sprouts fans should do. So let's get right into this. We did talk about this on Between the Links because that's when things were heating up. We were not where we were supposed to be in terms of weight and catch weight and all that stuff. But we found out last night that this fight between Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa will be a light heavyweight fight. Both men successfully made weight. Paulo Costa weighed in under the championship limit. But this whole thing has just been crazy because Marvin Vettori had put out some tweets throughout the week basically saying Paulo Costa's trying to get out of the fight. Then he shows up to media day and he says Paulo Costa has a ton of weight to cut. He's not going to make middleweight. And we all thought, this is Marvin being Marvin. He does things like this all the time. He's talking trash. And then Paulo Costa just shows up to the media day. He's like, yeah, I'm not fighting at middleweight. It's not going to happen. I'm 211 pounds. There's no way I'm going to make middleweight. And then there are talks about 195. We end up at 205. This whole thing has just been bananas. AK, what is your take on all of this? Is this, what is this? This is just crazy. Is this smart on Paulo Costa's part? Is he playing the game? Did the UFC set a wrong precedent that he just took advantage of, and this is smart on his part? Like, what do you make of this whole situation?
I mean, it's incredibly smart because he just got away with it. I mean, if this fight had been canceled, if Vettori had not agreed and we did end up with 195 or worse, 185, and only Vettori could make it and get paid and Costa didn't get paid, then I'd be like, oh, Costa, what are you doing? But apparently, other than 20% of his purse, which sucks, you know, but obviously he can afford it, calculated risk, he still has himself a main event fight at the weight that he wanted in this last second change, which we never see. I mean, this is we somewhat recently had Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler, which was kind of another weird situation, but you got the sense that they weren't quite as far along in their way. That was a weird one too, but I don't know. It's hard. Smart seems so complimentary, but but it's like anything. It's like we always say, if you cheat, and I wouldn't even go as far as to call this cheating, but if you game the system, if you circumvent the rules and you don't get caught and there's no real like major repercussion, again, aside from the 20%, then didn't you win in a way? Like didn't Costa win this pre fight week already with the fact that he got away with this? It's sinister and I don't like it at all. But he got away with it. So what can we really say about it?
Casey, I mentioned this in Between the Links, but this whole situation, obviously Paulo Costa completely unprofessional with this whole thing. But the other thing that kept popping into my mind was my father always told me playing sports, like work hard, be irreplaceable. Put yourself in a position where you cannot be replaced. And looking at this card from top to bottom, yes, there are some exciting names, some up-and-comers, some really good made fights in terms of action. But in terms of star power, you cannot lose this fight. You cannot lose this fight. All respect to Grant Dawson and Ricky Glenn, but UFC Fight Night, Dawson versus Glenn, does not have a lot of appeal to the casual audience. Now, Vittorio Costa...
Grant versus Ricky. Grant versus Ricky. Grant versus I like that.
Grant That's versus a good. Ricky. Yeah. but obviously the sizzle is with this main event. They're building the card around this main event. Paulo Costa felt like clearly that him and his team were like, listen, they can't lose this fight. We could basically do whatever we want here because they're not going to pull this fight from the card because they can't. I mean, they could, but they won't. Do you think this is their line of thinking? Overall, like, we're just not going to cut weight because you can't lose us at this point. You need me on this fight card. And two, what have you made of this whole thing? You seem to be celebrating what Paulo Costa has done.
Well, personally, is this back-to-back weeks where there has been no top 10 fighters or even top 15 fighters on the entire card?
No fighters, again, technically, fighters competing in there. In their weight class where they're ranked. Yeah, not in our rankings and not in the UFC's rankings. So yeah, we thought it had never happened before. And shout outs to a Nick Dwyer on Twitter for pointing this out. He said, this had never happened before the Dumont Ladd card. And now it's 2 weeks in a row. No fighters competing in the division in which they're ranked.
We are here for an historic time in mixed martial arts. This is unreal. It's like, everyone write this down in your journals. Like, where were you? Like when back-to-back weeks of two entire cards of unranked fighters in their respective weight classes. I think there was a question about Paulo Costa and the whole 205 shenanigans. I guess put my serious face on. He gamed the system. Costa outsmarted us all somehow. The guy that most of us thought was probably the biggest, not the most intelligent fighter. I don't know, Paulo Costa, and no one accused him of you know, being an intellectual, but he outsmarted us. He outsmarted the UFC. He outsmarted everyone. He only loses 20% of his purse. If he wins, he wins this whole entire show purse. So really, if he wins, he only gets a 10% cut. He only loses 10%, really. I guess he won't get his 50K bonus if it's something cool like that, but... Paulo Costa, he figured it out. Yeah, it's a very bad card with no name bad card for casual fans. If you follow the sport, yeah, Grant Dawson's fighting. Ooh, this is cool. You know, oh, Jessica Rose Clark is coming back. I want to see her fight again. Oh, Alex Caceres. Oh, you know, he's called Bruce Leroy. He's fought like a million times, you know. There's a lot of cool fights on the card, but yeah, we know this isn't a card that, you know, even casuals, even like you have to be really hardcore to be really into this card. And the unique start time, I don't even know why it's so early. Is it just because the European fighter Vittori, playoffs? I don't know.
Probably playoffs. Bellator counter programming.
Yeah, I guess. So yeah, there's a lot of weird things going on in this card. And Paulo Costa he's like, what are you gonna do? Scrap the fight? You know, it's like, so yeah, he did it. Got only 20% of his purse taken away. I'm kind of shocked that Vittori and his wonderful manager Ali couldn't somehow manage to get a little more cash out of Costa. But you know, they want to fight. Fighters are fighters, I guess. And go Paulo Costa. And let's talk about how freaking shredded he still looked. 20 pounds over what we expected him to come in at. I mean, I think the real story here is that Paulo Costa just clearly isn't a middleweight anymore. He looked like, we remember when he fought 185, that was the conversation every time. It's like, how the hell does he make middleweight? Well, it turns out he just isn't a middleweight anymore. That's how the hell he he couldn't do it again. And yeah, it would have been nice to call UFC a couple weeks ago and tell them, hey, I'm coming at a different weight class. Can you inform my opponent? That might have been the nice thing to do. But you know what? This fight week needed some sizzle. It had zero sizzle coming into this fight week. Hey, Paulo Costa, he did it. Now we're talking about it. Now there is extra hype for this fight. Yeah, it's not the best hype, but it's hype. And I didn't see anyone talking about this card or this fight card up until he decided to come in 20 pounds over. So
yeah, Costa had the biggest gain. Remember when he fought Romero in California? When, you know, because California shows the post weigh-in gains. So Costa had the biggest one. I remember I can't remember the percentage, but he was the biggest jump in weigh-in day to fight night weight. And he actually got the warning. I think he got the warning from California, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you fight in California again, you're not banned for fighting at middleweight, but, you know, next time we're going to keep an extra eye on you. So he really probably is done it at 185. It just doesn't make sense anymore. And Casey, you're really right about the build is created, because I remember when this matchup was made, I thought like, oh, these two guys are so active on Twitter. They're willing to say anything. We're going to see so much like crap, like flying, just dumbass social media comments. And they kind of both went like zero dark 30 for a while after the fight was like nothing. No Instagram posts, no little video like jabs, no dumb memes, like not even retweeting like fan memes about if there are any being funny to the guy. So I was like, oh man, this is disappointing. And then like Wednesday happens and we were like, holy crap. this is chaos. This is the chaos we expected between these two. Yeah, and I definitely have not seen anything like this before.
Yeah, and Costa.
Yeah, and if you watch the card on Saturday, if you watch the card this past Saturday, no fight card graphic at all. No promotional video for that fight whatsoever. Had Brennan Fitzgerald not mentioned the fact that the fight was happening, no one would have known about it. Like, there's no promotional push for this fight. So I wonder if maybe there was a way, like behind the scenes back then, that this fight was in jeopardy until they could figure this all out. So that's what's interesting about it. Casey, you brought up something. You talked about Ali. You talked about the management. And Ali obviously is a name that's very powerful in the MMA management space. We talk about fighters outfighting fighters. We talk about coaches outcoaching other coaches. Casey, did Waleed Ishmael outmanage Ali Abdelaziz this week?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, score one for Waleed. He wasn't even there. He was with his homie Figueredo in Arizona, I think. Was it Helwani had him on MMA Hour with Figueredo, and Waleed was, you know, there. And he asked him about Waleed about it. Waleed's like, interesting. I guess I'll talk to Paulo. Bob Paulo at later. Of course he knew. It's like, you know, it was just good gamesmanship. yeah, definitely. I mean, Costa did. He played the game. I mean, he played the game perfectly. And yeah. And now we're in the living in Costa's world.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
AK, let me ask you this, because I'm gonna mention a fellow Canadian. Credit to Nick Baldwin. I thought about this last night, but he was the first one that kind of put it out there. When this happened with Nick Diaz, yeah, it was a topic, but no one really made a huge – I mean, it was kind of a deal, but it wasn't like a massive deal. People were just like, who cares? It's Nick Diaz being Nick Diaz. He's going to fight. He's going to fight Robbie Lawler. Great. Like, we'll forgive this one. It seems like people are much harder on Paul Costa for this situation. Yes, there are some people who feel like he gamed the system and he was smart and he wins in this whole thing. And maybe what he did will change the way the UFC does their business moving forward. But the reactions are completely different. But aren't these like the same exact conversations? Like, this is the same thing, isn't it? But why is it just as simple as Nick Diaz being Nick Diaz? We'll forgive that. It's like Manny being Manny on the Red Sox. He does something stupid, makes a terrible play in left field. We forgive it because it's Manny being Manny. Is it Nick Diaz just because it's Nick and Paulo Costa is just kind of, I don't know, the whole wine thing and the excuses he made after the Izzy fight that were just harder on him? Like, how do you explain this?
I mean, there's that aspect of it. Keep in mind also, Nick Diaz just had not fought in so long. So I think everyone was willing to let so many things slide just to get him back into the octagon. People were amazed, I think, the fact that he even showed up to do like any media already. That was like, you know what? Like, Nick is going above and beyond right now. So whatever else. Yeah, right. Because if let's say he hadn't shown up for media day, I guarantee fans would have. But he showed up for some. He did some interviews.
One interview of ESPN. That was he did one interview. And he showed up for the press conference, actual press conference.
Yeah. And he showed up for press conference. If he had done neither of those, I still don't think any fans would have been like, oh, well, Nick Diaz didn't do any media obligations this week. So it had to do not just with his popularity, and he is a much more popular fighter than Paulo Costa, let's be real. But again, the longevity. It had just been so long, and the thought that he was even going to fight again seemed so unrealistic. I know. I was one of them, I think. Up until they were in the cage, I was like, this fight's not happening. Mm-hmm. Something's going to happen. Like, I don't know. Either a guy's going to get injured or, again, just some sort of other screwiness, Nick Diaz-related screwiness, and it didn't happen. So the circumstances, you're right. If you look at it at a glance, are the same. But when you take into account the last, like, 8 years of history, unfortunately, in this case. And Paul Costa just doesn't have that track record. So, and if anything, Paul Costa really needed to get back in the good graces of people with, you know, a somewhat disappointing performance against Adesanya. All the memes he became afterwards with his excuses that, I drank a little too much wine and all this stuff, and his kind of bizarre social media behavior. So there was this thought like, you know what? We can excuse all this if he gets back in there, puts on a strong performance against Vittori and bounces back. And we'll just forget. We don't care about any of that stuff as long as fighters win fights. And then when you come in and start making even more demands, I mean, that's another thing altogether. Now, again, could this all be erased with a strong performance on Saturday? Yeah, possibly. I think there's some people who will be like, yeah, it's great. Happy to see him again. First round knockout, maybe, right? But there are people, no matter what he does, are going to hate him even more, win or lose, because of his behavior this week, for sure.
But I don't think that matters.
And you make.
I don't think that
matters. Hold on, Keith. Because you make an interesting point about a win erases all of this, right? And while Paulo Costa may have won the fight week and is one up until right now, he may not win the fight tomorrow. Marvin Vettori is a very tough out, whether it's at 185 or 205 in PAC. Spoiler alert, I'm picking Marvin Vettori to beat the brakes off of Paulo Costa tomorrow. And I would have picked him at 185, 205, heavyweight. I think it's the same fight no matter what. I think Marvin Vettori is going to win this fight and win it rather convincingly. Casey, is this a must win now for Paulo Costa because of all these shenanigans? Like, he goes out there and gets drubbed tomorrow by Marvin Vettori. Does the UFC just say, we are out of the Paulo Costa business moving forward?
Why would they be out of the Costa business? I don't get that. It's like, he missed weight. He's going up a weight class. That's all that's going on. He's just going up a weight class. He's just a guy that can't make, he's a guy that can't make 185. This is all good press to me,
he had no intention of making 185 when he signed the contract. Zero. Like, clearly he had zero intention of making it.
Did you see the man on the scale? That guy's still shredded, 20 pounds over what he was supposed to weigh in.
I agree. I agree. But if you're going to sit there and take this fight, why not just negotiate 185 or 205 right away? Why put the pen to paper for 185 and then just – I understand the gaming the system. Mm-hmm. I understand all of this. I understand this is a smart move, being irreplaceable, so forth and so on. But he had no intentions of making 185 or even coming close to it, apparently. So that's going to piss them off, right? Like, he's not Nick Diaz. He doesn't have that kind of star power, does he?
I don't know. We're talking about this guy for how long we've been doing this show. We're 18 minutes into this. We've been talking. You've mentioned Marvin Vettori for about 6 seconds. We've been talking 18 minutes. We've talked 18 minutes about Paulo Costa. So he's not Nick Diaz, but he has an aura about him, and I think it's fine. I think he realizes that, and yeah, if he gets his butt kicked, yeah, I guess getting his butt kicked is gonna suck regardless. If he got his butt kicked to 85, I think we'd be like, oh, what's next for Paulo Costa? Does the UFC even want him around? You know, still, I mean, is he done? I think if he gets his butt kicked, he's a 205er next week, you know, and then yeah, Paulo Costa versus Ryan Spann next week if he gets his butt kicked. I just don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a fun fight week topic. It's unique. It's very unique. This doesn't happen often. So it's something fun to talk about when all these fight weeks just kind of blend in together. You know, another Apex card. So to me, this is kind of fun. And I think the matchmakers, yeah, I know they have a spreadsheet and like, oh crap, now we have to move that name over there into that weight class. Yeah, it might annoy them. What, they had to do like an extra 30 minutes of work and just scratch out a contract and go, all right, here you go. I mean, yeah, I think it's fine. I understand what you're saying. I really do. If it was just, you know, if this was, you know, Francisco Trinado doing this, that's a different story. But Costa, he has that it factor. He has that look that Dana White loves, you know, just freaking muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles. And he's a badass fighter. And when he fights, their fights are exciting, win or lose. He is an exciting fighter. And I think that's the most important part. I mean, I don't recall any boring Paulo Costa fights.
No.
But Marvin Vettori's been in some stinkers. He wins. Yeah. He's a great fighter, but...
Yeah. Resume is not all that impressive, though, if we're being honest. He got to a title fight, yes. The Romero fight was fun, but some of the other wins are a little suspect when comparing them to other middleweights. And I don't want to make this the crap on Paulo Costa show, because it isn't. Because, AK, when you have a villain, you have a babyface. And Marvin Vettori, of all people, has become the biggest babyface on this card for sticking with it, for taking the fight at whatever weight. Even the shenanigans, like even I was so excited for this weigh-in face-off. I don't think I've ever been more excited for a weigh-in face-off than to see this one. And I thought Vettori was going to be even more animated than he actually was today. And he was pretty damn animated up there. But Marvin Vettori is in the good graces of the UFC. If there is ever a chance that he gets a title fight coming off of a win, I don't think it's going to happen because Robert Whittaker's next. But Marvin Vettori might have put himself in a position where he is not as far away as we think. Right? Like, am I crazy?
I think you're a little crazy. I don't think there's any scenario where, because he and Izzy fought recently. They fought twice already. Yes, one title fight, but it's still the 2-0 sense. Neither fight was particularly memorable, if we're being fair. Not bad fights at all, but not super exciting. So other than Marvin seeming to believe it, that he's 2-0 in the series the other way, there's not a lot of movement. Again, he could finish Costa in the first round, and I don't think that he's getting another title shot anytime soon. He could put himself back on the shortlist, but he's just the way his fight with Izzy went. But again, if Izzy loses the title, then I guess that changes the story completely. Then Vettori is right back in there, so obviously he'd be rooting for anyone to beat Izzy. So yeah, he's keeping himself in the title picture, but as long as Adesanya is at the top,
I just don't think that that they're going to look at him for at least two or three more fights. I think it's going to take a lot. So I don't see him in there. And as far as Costa, how this affected his standing, I don't think he's done it at all. This is like the Rumble Johnson thing, man. Rumble Johnson, people forget, remember when he tried to move up to middleweight?
He missed, yeah.
And he just embarrassed himself against Vitor. He missed by like 13 pounds or something. He was handled by Vitor Belfort. Yeah, committed. And then he said, oh, well, back one more weight class. And then he ended up getting a title fight and looking very good at heavyweight. And he also had domestic violence cases on his record. So it's like, if that guy was not out of the good graces of the UFC, and he might have been a little more popular than Costa, but Costa is more accomplished at 185 than Rumble at 170. Rumble had some nice highlight reel knockouts, but Costa has a much better resume at 185 than welterweight Rumble. So if they were going to put up with Rumble, I think they'll put up with Costa. Again, it is handled a little bit differently. Costa is just so openly, like I said, this week seemed to be so openly flaunting his trick that he had pulled off here. But other than that, barring something very straight, public comments or some weird, poor negotiations backstage, I think he moves up to light heavyweight, and I think we see him in the UFC for the foreseeable future.
We shall see. We shall see. So right now, the betting line, according to our friends at DraftKings, Marvin Vettori, the -180 favorite, the comeback on Paulo Costa is +155, I think.
Was that the same line when it was 85? Was that the same line as last week when people assumed it was a middleweight?
That's a good question.
Vettori opened as a +130 dog, and this is the highest the line has been. Yeah, money's coming in on Marvin Vettori. It has been for the last few days. Pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So I think the line's about right. I would probably put it a little bit higher for Vettori. I honestly think he's going to go out there and put it on Paulo Costa tomorrow. But do you agree with the line, Casey? Like, and let me just throw this out there, because I don't think it matters at all. I don't think the 205, I mean, obviously it favors Costa because he didn't have to cut to 185. So clearly it favors him a little bit. But all in all, when it comes to the actual fight, does this being now a 205 pound fight, does it favor one fighter over the other?
If Costa put in a real training camp, and judging by his physical body, it looks like he did, I think it heavily favors Costa, because this means he actually got to train and become a better mixed martial artist rather than train just to lose weight over the last, 2 months of his training camp. And I think this is a big advantage for Paulo Costa. This is a big disadvantage for Vettori. He's going to be fighting heavier, a little bit heavier than he normally fights. But more importantly, during the, like, you hear this from fighters all the time, my training camp is, all I'm doing is just cutting weight. I'm just like miserable. I'm just like dieting. I'm just like training tired because I'm just starving myself, getting all this water on my system and all this stuff. So I actually think this is a big advantage for Costa. And I kind of like how Costa is kind of underselling himself. He's not going out there and doing interviews like, I'm training my butt off, I'm working so hard. He's just like, I drink wine, hit some pads, he's not even talking about what he's doing when the camera's off. But I think Costa is gonna look actually really good at 205. He's gonna be a shorter 205er when he faces the other, regular 205ers. But for Costa, for this fight in particular, I think this is a big advantage for the eraser. Is he still the eraser or the eraser?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Bolachinia means the eraser, he's kind of using that, but kind of not. Like, yeah. He's not using that nickname anymore.
Does this change anything for you, AK?
A little bit. I think I might have been leaning Costa when the fight was first announced. I probably was already tilting towards Vettori before all this weigh-in chicanery, and now. I'm just getting the sense. Should I give my official pick now? Should I segue into my official pick?
Sure. Sure.
I'm just getting the sense that much like the Knicks, now we'll go back to the Nick Diaz situation. I don't know how motivated Costa is to actually win this fight. I do feel like he's showing up. I think he's like glad he didn't have to cut the weight. I think he's glad that whatever, it's only costing him 20%. No, I get it. As Casey kind of touched on before, it'd be very, very stupid to lose that 20% and then not do everything you can to get that win bonus. That's the whole point of missing the 20. But I don't know if he's the kind of guy who can just turn it on like that, who can come in seemingly unmotivated
and then just kind of be like, oh, well, it's fight night now. You know what? I was taking this seriously this whole time. I'm actually ready to go in there with another top 10 guy and really just put it on him. It's possible. He's a great striker, you know, not great knockout power, but I really am leaning towards Vettori. And the other reason is, I don't know if Costa, I'm trying to think, has he fought any great wrestlers? Johnny Hendricks is not a great wrestler in that sense, like offensively, in the UFC anyway. Yoel Romero, again, doesn't use his wrestling offensively that much in MMA. I don't know if he's fought someone who's really probably going to be focused on taking it to the
ground. Are we calling Vettori a great wrestler?
I mean, I think he's very good. I think he's very good. Obviously,
what fight are we basing this on? We basing this Kevin Holland fight? Kevin Holland. Sure, you're a great wrestler if you out wrestle Kevin Holland. Is that what we're basing this on?
Dominated him. I thought that was pretty good. He's uses wrestling in all of his fights. It's not like he's out.
I mean, I'm just making sure that we're putting Marvin Vettori in the great wrestler category.
Well, I think it's fair to say he's a better wrestler than anyone that like offensively than anyone that he's faced. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
I think
Costa
being a much bigger. I think Costa is going to be the bigger fighter on fight night, and I think Vettori is a big middleweight, and I think that's been an advantage for him. And I don't think that size advantage is going to be there to necessarily make them that great wrestler that we've seen before over Costa with the size advantage not really being there for Vettori.
I would agree, except again, like I said, I'm looking at the not making weight as a bad thing. Like, I know we looked at it as gaming the system, and which is fine. It made the lead up to the fight easier for Costa. But it strikes me more as a sign of he's not disciplined, he's not prepared, he's not taking this seriously. And I think that's going to cost him against a very high, kind of high pressure, smothering fighter like Vettori. So I'm going to go Vettori, and I think Vittori's going to submit him. I'll go round two submission for Vettori.
I think it's a finish. I think we're in the championship rounds, but I think he gets a finish in the fourth. I think he's just gonna eventually wear him. I think Costa's gonna have his moments, gonna land some big shots, but Vettori, like Israel Adesanya so eloquently put it on his breakdown of the fight, he's got that blockhead, and if he's got a great chin, he can take a shot, and he took some big ones throughout his career, and he's been okay. I think he can, if he can weather that early Costa storm, I think it's his fight all the way. So again, it seems like with a lot of these main events, get out of the first round, I think you're okay. I think he gets out of the first round, and then I think he cruises and gets a finish in the fourth. Casey, you seem to be on a differing end here. Are you picking Paulo Costa to win this fight?
Paulo Costa, first round, TKO by body shots.
Woo! Wow.
Spicy.
I don't think Mr. Costa is I don't think he was unprofessional. I think he had a hard training camp. I think he knew what he was doing. He played everyone. I think he's playing Vettori. Even their interviews, he's trolling Marvin in interviews. When they did a cool thing where they're both on Skype talking to each other, and he made Vettori basically explain to him what weigh-ins are. Like, what? We have to weigh in? When? Friday? I was like, it was just like, I love it. I don't know. I love what Costa. I love the hype that Costa brought into this fight week, and I think him at 205 over the 185er Vettori. I think the wrestling won't be there for Vettori as much as we think it will be, and I think Costa is going to be stronger and not dehydrated coming into the fight, and I think Costa is going to look really good, and I think he will. You can't knock out Vettori. He, like I say, is a blockhead, but Costa has amazing body shots, and I expect that's what we're going to see on tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon.
I'll tell you what, if Paulo Costa goes out there and starches Marvin Vettori in the first round like that, I will come on the post-fight show and just say, this was the greatest example of pre-fight gamesmanship in the history of MMA, because it doesn't get better than that. Nope. Like, if this is just a full-on troll job all week long, like, and all of this led to a first round finish, I will come on here and be like, I will give Paulo Costa a standing ovation. I will give him a standing ovation. As unprofessional as I feel this is. And by the way, let me just make this point, and I think both of you gentlemen will agree with me. As unprofessional as this may seem, and I feel there's some unprofessionalism going on, this is the UFC's fault 100%. We do not have harsh enough penalties for these fighters missing weight, especially the entry-level fighters, why would any of these guys make weight? What's the point? You lose 20% and then of what? Like, what are you actually giving up? You're not giving up that much. Like, you're not. You're not giving up that much. So until there's actually incentive for this to happen or there's repercussions for fighters to miss weight, especially like this, who's going to not – like, we can't say anything. Like, we can talk about each individual scenario, but I ain't mad at him. I ain't mad at him at all, if we're being honest. It is unprofessional, but still, the UFC has laid down the groundwork for him to do this, and he's playing the damn game. Good on him.
I've seen fighters do this dozens of times where they're, I mean, no one's done it quite to the extreme that Costa has, but like fighters come in like the first or second fighter and they'll come in like 4 or 5 pounds over at 9 a.m. You're like, hey, bro, you had like 2 more hours to cut weight. And they're like, no, I'm just going to miss weight. They take a couple of grand and now I'm not going to feel like crap tomorrow night. And being so low in the card on a 14 fight card, especially if you're a prelim fighter, I mean, we've seen enough fights. Oh, that guy got an amazing knockout, an amazing submission. They still don't win a bonus. There's no guarantees in this whole bonus game. So you can't plan your career around bonuses. It just doesn't work that way. But you can save a lot of stress to your body and not make weight, and then show up much fresher than your opponent. So this is all the UFC's fault. And one of the biggest things, if that 20% also affected their win bonus, like say 20% your show, and if you win, still 20%, or I don't know, something like that. So something that affects their win bonus, then this weight thing kind of changes. But the fact that it's only from the show money, and I don't understand why. I've never understood why that is. This is the UFC's or commission's fault. I don't know who the 20%. I don't know if it's a commission thing or UFC thing or. Because they always say, well, we're going to talk about it, but it's always the same number, 20%.
Yeah. I mean, and then Dana allowing...
Only the show money. I just want to emphasize that so much. It's only the show money, which is only half their check. And if they win, if Costa wins, he gets his 100% of his win bonus, which for 99% of fighters is usually the same amount as their show money.
Right. And what the UFC could have done in this situation, which no one would have blamed them for it. I mean, fans may be watching a card headlined by two guys that they really don't know a whole lot about, even though Grant Dawson and Ricky Glenn are very good fighters. You could have just said, Marvin, you get your win in your show. We're going to throw you at MSG against maybe Sean Strickland, or we're going to get you another big fight. Paul, you're off the card. You don't get a dime. And then none of this, I mean, no one would blame the UFC for doing this. We understand why they're not doing it, and Paul Costa knew that they wouldn't do this. So, again, he played this perfectly. He's got as good of an advantage as he could have heading into a fight. We'll see how the UFC handles the aftermath, especially if he loses. But there you go. This is, like Casey said, this has become a much more interesting fight week than you and I thought, AK, after we, like, the closing moments of On to the Next One. We just ran down the car like, okay, it's a fight. Decent main event, and then here we go.
Just a ho-hum middleweight main event. Between two 185ers going to face off next week.
So that's the main event. We talked about it for 35 minutes. We got Grant Dawson, Ricky Glenn in the co-main event. Grant Dawson, I believe, is the biggest favorite on the card. -510, comeback of Ricky Glenn is +375.
Is this Grant's first fight at 55 or his second?
Second
fight. Okay.
Leonardo Santos.
He had the Leo Santos fight that he...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Hammerfist.
Hammerfist, yeah. Okay.
After the James Krause just verbal drubbing he took between rounds 2 and 3. Like Casey said, Jessica Rose Clark is back. First time since her torn ACL. Taking on Jocelyn Edwards. Alex Caceres back against Seungwoo Choi. This is like the quintessential Alex Caceres fight. Yeah. No doubt about that. Dwight Grant against Francisco Trinaldo. And then... you know, some interesting prelims. You got Ike Villanueva back against Nikolai Nagumaranu, Gregory Rodriguez against Jun Young Park, Maria de Oliveira Neta versus Tabitha Ricci. David Onama makes his UFC debut against Mason Jones. That's a great fight. Kama Worthy versus Jai Herbert. Very big fight for both of those guys. Jamie Pickett, Laureano Staropoli, Daniel Lacerda, Jeff Molina. Things got a little testy at their face-off. Livia Hanata Souza versus Randa Marcos. I mean, we keep saying Randa Marcos is a must win, and they keep giving her fights. So I don't know if it's a must win or not.
No contest.
Jonathan Martinez, who made weight. Jonathan Martinez made 135. Very happy for him. Good job taking on a newcomer, Ziviad Lazishvili. That'll be the first.
Unbeaten.
Yes, 12-0. Good fighter. And then we got Bellator. Fedor versus Timothy Johnson. That's happening as well.
I'm excited to see Minnikov. I don't know too much about his opponent, but Vitaly Minnikov is probably one of the most underrated heavyweights in the world. And he's 22-1. He's incredibly good. So it's good to see him back.
These are some proper – this Bellator – I have some thoughts about the Vegas card before we head off or questions. But I do want to say about the Bellator card. This is how you do a showcase card. First card in Russia. You have Minnikov face. Again, these are all solid opponents, opponents that they should truck. Said Selma from the U.S. Usman Nurmagomedov is facing Patrick Piatila from – I think he's Greek. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm Finnish. I'm sorry, Finland. Anatoly Tokov, who could be the next middleweight contender, depending what's – I assume Austin Vanderford is getting that first shot next. But after that, Tokov could get it with a big win over Sharaf Davlatmuradov. We've got Darina Mazjuk, who won who beat the 530-pound guy freak show fight last November.
Oh, that's her.
So she's actually.
Why do we not lead the show with that? Oh my goodness!
I know. Yeah.
And Baby Fedor's fighting. Good lord!
Anyone who missed out that story, just Darina. Look for Darina on MMAfighting.com and. A fight of dubious quality and legitimacy, I will say, but an amusing scene all the same, and one that apparently got her a Bellator contract. So there you go. She'll be making her debut finally for their promotion. That's a very nice showcase card. The UFC, though, like you just ran down the card, Mike. I think every fight has – I have my eye on at least one fighter. If not a good matchup, I have my eye on at least one fighter. I think that's always fun to see. I'm glad that they saved some of these fights.
What's that mean?
I think this card could be super fun. I'm going to go. Maybe I've just been compared to the last two cards, which I wasn't crazy about. I'll say like an eight. I say like this could hit an eight if everything goes right. Yeah.
Because
I think it will see a lot of finishes, which I know people like. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a great card, but I know it does make the cards go a little bit faster. People like those. And I think, again, there's some storylines. As I said, this could be Ronda Marcos' last fight with the UFC or not. Or she wins and she somehow snaps a 5-fight losing streak and saves her job, which would be incredible. You've got guys like David Onama debuting, who probably would have debuted further down the road eventually, but is now getting this short notice opportunity against a guy like Mason Jones, who's awesome. You said Martinez making weight. He's such a talented guy. If he can consistently make bantamweight, that's fun. He's facing Lazishvili, who is getting huge step up in competition. Lazishvili, if you look at his record, a lot of zeros and zeros on there. So we'll see. I don't know if he's just hasn't been able to find good opponents or has just been crushing weak opposition. Now he gets to find out. And just a lot of other compelling matchups. Jun Young Park is a really good middleweight. I think he's a sleeper middleweight defender.
Say his name. Say his nickname. Say his real name. The Iron Turtle. The Iron Turtle. One of the best nicknames in the sport. The Iron Turtle. Okay. Respect the man.
And I love the matchup with Gregory Rodriguez. Gregory Rodriguez was a great story in his last fight. So this is a good card. This is a really fun card.
Anyone want to guess? Obviously, the biggest favorite of the weekend is Usman Nurmagomedov.
Bellator. Yeah.
How much of a favorite do you think he is? Minus fill in the blank, AK.
I'll go first. Okay. Usman Nurmagomedov is a minus 1,400 favorite.
Casey?
Minus 1,450.
Are you press writing me?
Yes. I mean, that is the Casey wins and gets to play the showcase showdown.
But
minus 3,800. Ooh, minus 3,800.
Hey, listen, guys, if you bet on MMA, I always say don't bet on MMA. Throw 10 bucks on Patrick Piatila, because anything can happen in MMA. You get a freakish disqualification. Nurmagomedov could twist his ankle 30 seconds into the fight. And guess what? You just made five times. You just made like $150, over $150 on a $5 bet.
$1,600.
So,
yeah. For the random DQ victory, I would agree. Yeah, I definitely agree.
Plus 1,600. So it goes. I'm sorry. I was doing like he was a plus. Sorry. Yeah. So only plus 1,600. So you just made like $80 on a $5 bet. So
just do it. What's the harm in it now? That's crazy. That's insane. Like, oh my gosh, guys who are 13-0 against, you know, mostly unproven competition should not be nearly minus 4,000 favorites against anybody. That's ridiculous.
But that's how you make those highlight reels. That's how you.
That's great matchmaking.
You know, and if Usman Nurmagomedov was fighting someone a little bit more legit, no one's tuning in extra. I mean, we're watching Usman Nurmagomedov. We're watching the Fedor card, and he happens to be on it. So yeah, there's no reason to give him in a highly competitive fight.
Oh, and I love the matchmaking.
I didn't realize actually the co-main event really was originally much. The booking made much more sense originally. It was Mendikov versus Tyrell Fortune. Then I saw that Tyrell Fortune had to pull out because of injury. That's why I was like, who is he fighting? Yes. So this is a late replacement. So I wasn't aware of that. But buff cards rule. Buff cards are fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's some fun.
But I do agree with you on the UFC card. I'm looking at every fight. Every fight, there is a little interest. I'm like, I wonder how that guy's doing. I wonder how his fight turned. I don't see future title contenders on this card. Maybe outside of Grant Dawson, maybe. I definitely see him making the top 10 at some point. But everyone else, you know, it's like, cool. I like watching them fight. And
Well, Jeff Molina got votes in our MMA fighting rankings. Right. So yeah, he's good. He could be a top 10 guy.
I'm a big fan of the Brazilian gangster, Livia Souza, and
she's fantastic.
And I love Jonathan Martinez. Just I love fighters like that. Just they'll just knock your head off and just kind of they'll kind of crack a maybe half a smile for a moment.
Yeah. Kama Worthy, too. We haven't seen him in a while. I don't know why. Yeah, it feels like we haven't seen him. And then Tabitha Ricci, really making her real debut. She debuted at 125 against Manon Firo on short notice. She's clearly not a 125er. That fight looked ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
So now we actually get to see her at 115. So yeah, it's an intriguing card.
Yes, and Bellator's card is down to 10 fights.
Mm.
Good for them.
So there you go. It went from 12 to 10. One of the Tokovs is off the card. His opponent not medically cleared.
Also Rabadnov, and I believe Alexander Belik. That fight also got canceled this morning. So, okay,
all right.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
So let's go to the peeps. Let's see what the peeps are finding on these cards.
I've been collecting a little bit of comments.
Oh, my goodness.
Joseph Boza.
What? Bellator's... what they should be doing.
When I was laughing, I'm laughing at the odds makers. Like, I feel like this... Again, this is probably how it is because all the money's coming out on Usman. But I imagine the opening line was probably 3,000. So it probably moved... Well, and if it moved 800, that's still... the opening line is probably even higher. It's like 3,500 and probably just moved.
Nope.
Oh, what was the opening?
Minus 700.
So it's just people piling money on Usman. Yeah. As they should,
This started October. The line opened October 19th at minus 700. It is 3 days later, and it is now minus 3,800. So there you go.
People, don't bet on MMA. Bellator. If you're some Bitcoin NFT bro, and you're like, I got like 10,000 Bitcoin,
Dogecoins or whatever,
Dogecoin to bet on. Don't waste it because again, anything can happen, and it's just not worth. How much could you even be making? So again, this is what you had to bet $380 to win $100. No, even more. I'm sorry. You had to bet $380 to win $10.
Yeah, it's $10 and I had before.
For every $380, you had to bet $3,800 to win this no.
Now let me also say we are going off our friends at DraftKings. Okay, mm-hmm, if you go to other sites, there are lines as low as -1900.
Oh
there
God! Are lines stop it, as Mike. Low as stop it, Mike.
-25. Stop. But -38 is DraftKings. Okay,
Tapology has it at -2500. It's just so you know.
Someone okay. is sitting on the sick. Someone is setting up a sick Vegas 41, Bellator 269, Pudzianowski versus Bombardier, KSW parlay right now, and you're about to and about to ruin their lives.
Yes. All right. What else you got?
Oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah, you can't blame the promotion for that. That this is the right matchmaking. No, it's the betting community that brought the line this high. Yeah.
Another one from Mr. Boza.
What is one fight under the radar that should be getting love that isn't? Mine is Livianata Souza versus Randa Marcos. Randa has lost 5 out of her last 6 fights. So, I mean, I think you can make the argument that outside of the main event, especially with what's been going on this week, every fight has flown under the radar.
Yeah.
That is an interesting matchup. What is yours, Casey? What is your under the radar fight?
I would actually say this one just because I'm a big fan of Miss Souza and I'm just Randa Marcos being the Sam Alvey of the women's division. Just somehow, cool, you're still in the UFC. Good for you. Iron Turtle. I just like saying his name. I can't really recall his fights, to be honest, but it's just a great nickname. So I'm going very surface level here.
AK?
I'm so excited about Onama and Mason Jones. I just kind of recently discovered Onama, I will say, but I mean, from what I've seen, this guy looks fantastic. I do think probably his future's at featherweight, so maybe he might be at a bit of a disadvantage here on short notice and against, I think, a more natural lightweight. Yeah. But I think it'll be a somewhat competitive fight. He might end up on the wrong end of a highlight reel this time around, because I think Mason Jones is really, really, really good and just has had a bit of bad luck in the cage so far. And he had the amazing fight with Mike Davis. That was Mason Jones, right?
Yep.
Yes. Again, every time we bring it up, one of the best fights of the year. And so I do think this is a matchup that's made for Mason Jones to win, but I think people will see a little bit of the potential of Onama and he'll get another shot and again, kind of get to make a more proper first introduction next time. But I like that fight. I think if he is able to make it out of the first round, I think that could be one of the best fights tonight.
Real quick.
Yeah, how many, that's a good one.
Last week, how many fights did Jim Miller have in the UFC? Was it 30?
That was his 39th
fight. 39th. We have on this card also another kind of fighter, almost Jim Miller light with Alex Caceres. This is like his 29th fight in the UFC, something like that, coming up. I lost count. It wasn't quite 30, but
it's close.
He's almost at 30 fights in the UFC, and he's someone that he hasn't even. I think maybe he sniffed the top 10 once.
Caceres. No, he's been like I think like top 15. He snuck in there. That's it.
Okay, well, top 15 then. I'm just amazed how fighters like that can kind of continually kind of get that 2 wins, 1 loss, 2 losses, 1 win type of scenario throughout their whole career. And I'm always just impressed like how these guys sneak up on, you know, 30 fights in the freaking UFC. 30 fights. Can you imagine if we saw Justin Gaethje fight 30 times in UFC or Conor McGregor fighting 30 times in UFC? It just doesn't happen. And some, you know, guys like Caceres somehow can make that walk, you know, that many times. I'm not even counting all his exhibition tough fights, but
he's also the third biggest underdog on the card, Alex Caceres. How about that?
So yeah,
classic Alex Caceres fight.
Yeah, and the UFC have used him perfectly. Has this kind of, I would say that kind of. There's different levels of gatekeepers, and he's kind of that. You got to be Alex Caceres if we want to think of you as a potential top 15 fighter, and that's where we're at with him fighting. Sungwoo Choi.
I'll go with Jeff Molina, Daniel Lacerda. I think that's going to be a really good fight. Jeff Molina, I'm very high on anyways. Daniel kind of getting in there and trying to make a name for himself. 125 is always fun. I think those two guys are just going to bring some heat. It's going to be a fun fight. Fun prelim. What else we got? Daniel Podin. If the fine is 90%, weight misses don't happen. Okay, so yes, that would hurt. But I also think we gotta do something in the fight. Like, I agree, and I'm not the first person to say this. I'm sure as hell not going to be the last one. We got to take a point away. take a point right off the bat. That will negate a lot of things. Like if you just made the standard weight miss 30 to 40% every single time. So the 20, like it's automatically 30. If it's like egregious, make it 40. And then you take a point. That's huge because then you're affecting the outcome of the fight. You're taking out all those other reasons why you would want to miss weight because I could just get the win bonus. But if you're down a point already, that hurts. That sucks. That changes everything.
I definitely agree with the point deduction. I do not agree with the 90% because I think while that sounds good in theory, the reality is we're going to get fighters killing themselves even more so to make that weight. And Marvin Vettori, Paulo Costa, I'm assuming they're making, you know, decent coin. But, dude, half of these fighters have freaking roommates. You know what I mean? Like, they need every freaking penny they can get. And so 9%, I think, it creates too much danger, especially with all the things happen. You know, you have injuries, their knee hurts, they can't jump on the treadmill as much. There's a lot of things that just happen, you know. So I don't agree with 90%, but I would love to see a point deduction. Does any promotion do that? Or is that something someone just kind of came up with? And you're like, why don't we try this out?
I don't think anyone's made that a standard thing.
Does Ryzen or Pride, did they give you an automatic, I guess that's a fine, it's not a point deduction.
I feel like Ryzen, now that you mentioned it, I feel like Ryzen did something weird with that, right?
I don't think anyone's actually affected their final judging criteria based on the weight. But I think the biggest thing is it needs to come off the win money too. I think that's the big thing that needs to happen.
Yeah, and if you don't want to do that, just take the point, and that at least has some effect potentially on the win money.
Yeah, yeah. I just I kind of have difficulty, you know, coming to terms with, you know, missing weight by half a pound, which is, you know, that sucks, versus missing weight by, you know, 3 pounds versus missing weight by 20 pounds. So there needs to be some sort of bend in there, basically, I think.
Yeah. I think if you take a point too, I think fighters who cut dramatic amounts of weight will not do that anymore. They'll just go up a weight class and they don't want to lose the point and lose that money. So go ahead, AK.
I wish to say this isn't all in the UFC as well. The commissions have to get involved as well. That's, I think, like a lot of what California's been doing with the, measuring the fight night weights and, you know, telling them like, okay, well, we think you should move up. We're not like saying, you know, we can't force you to and things like that. That's right. Daniel Potin mentioned it was Israel Adesanya who said they should do 90%. He was very upset about his teammate Shane Young having to fight someone who's very badly overweight. But the commissions have to be involved too. So it's not all in the UFC. The UFC definitely would not want to unilaterally make these decisions, even if it could, because then you're liable for a lot of weirdness and you're going to take even more blame as people are saying, like, oh, sure, man, like the optics would be bad for the UFC if it was like, oh, UFC decrees 90% off, you know, penalty for fighters. That's not going to look good for them. Now, if it's something like UFC and commissions and so on and so forth agree for stiffer penalty, it certainly softens the blow. So, yeah, commissions have to get involved. I like a lot of the advancements they're making in California. It's just a matter of getting everyone on the same page, and we can't even get all the rules right in the same in every state. So it's a good idea, but it's a long way to go, guys.
Yeah,
long way. But the promotions can also pull fights if they want as well.
Yeah,
if they choose to. T-Bumble, this picture's hilarious. Paulo Costa is inadvertently beta testing the 1FC weight cutting policy. A hydration test will reveal that Costa is adequately hydrated with Cabernet. it's possible. You never know.
You know, you
never know what these
this
guys
is
do.
A kind of a funny comment, but this goes back to what AK said earlier about when Costa did weigh in at 185 and then how much he rehydrated. And you could just tell that just the numbers show that he cuts an incredibly dangerous amount of weight to make middleweight. So I know this is kind of a jokey comment, but there is a little truth in it. And unfortunately, I don't think Vegas does hydration tests pre-fight, or at least they don't release them publicly. No, I know California does, but it'd be very interesting to find out what it would be. Did we answer this already? Did we talk about this?
Should the UFC have given Marvin a show and win and just rebook him on another card? This is crap. I hope people don't give Aspen Ladd any more crap for her bad weight cut 2 weeks ago versus Macy. So that is now, if the UFC wanted to set a precedent Okay. There's already been some things done over the last several weeks. Nick Diaz, Jake Hadley getting a contract on the Contender Series after missing weight. That's never happened before. He made Dana White break his rules. They're laying down seeds for these things to happen. And if the UFC wanted to put a stop to this precedent, they would have just pulled the they would have pulled the fight. They would have just paid Marvin, win and show, you know, maybe kick him a couple bucks some other way and just be like, yo, go fight this top five guy. Go fight Sean Strickland in MSG. Like, big fight, big card, fans, all that stuff, and you get a chance to make double the money. They could have done that. They didn't do that here, and for obvious reasons that we just talked about. So, listen, I don't blame Paulo Costa for this whatsoever. I don't blame him. I think it's unprofessional. I do. But at the same time, there's no big penalty for it. The UFC wasn't going to pull the fight. So why not do it? Why not do it and put yourself in the best position to win? So I don't blame him whatsoever. The UFC could have pulled this fight. They chose not to.
Yeah.
Paulo knew they weren't going to.
And let's be honest. What does the UFC gain from pulling this fight? I'm sorry, literally nothing. Why would the UFC not want this fight to happen? They're glad they saw the managers were working things out. The UFC was like, good stuff. Jobs, good stuff. You guys work that out. You let us know where you're fighting at. Why would they get involved? Like, what do they have? I know we all think like, well, they should send a message. They don't want this to happen in the future. But it's like, they just take it as, well, we'll cross that, come to it. And go around. This policy has come back to bite them in the ass before. This kind of like, let's just take things as they go. It happens. And then we've seen fights, you know, and get canceled for stupid reasons. And then we go back, man, what if the UFC had nipped this problem in the bud, whatever, like 6 months ago, da da. But the machine keeps rolling so effortlessly. There's no reason for them to crack down and set any sort of precedent right now. It just doesn't benefit them. And I know that sounds so cynical and so sad, but why would they want to get rid of a main event that has this kind of name power when they have another card? They have another card next week they got to worry about anyway. So why
think of the timing too. Think of the timing. What's the next 2 weeks? What are the next two cards? You got 267 and you got 268 back-to-back weeks. You need to get eyeballs on this UFC card to promote those two events. I understand in the United States that 267 is part of the ESPN Plus subscription, but you also want to entice others to buy said subscription.
And you got to remind people, you got to wake up early to watch that card. This ain't a regular time. It's like, it starts at like 7 a.m. or something.
I love that. I love it so much.
Can I shout out Andrew Brown in the comments, who says that the UFC would gain professionalism from this, from cracking down this. They want to be the biggest sport in the world.
That's a nice thought.
Andrew, I wish that were true. They don't care about professionalism. I think we've seen their handling of conduct over the last 10 years. They don't care about professionalism. Being the biggest sport
over the last month.
Last month, being the biggest sport in the world would be great, I'm sure. They don't care about that.
They don't want to.
They're so insanely profitable. They wouldn't be having friggin' cards every 48 out of 52 weeks if they cared about being the biggest sport. No, they want to be present. They want to be lucrative, which they are insanely lucrative. But journalism and size are actually not, I would say, are not the priorities. They're just, as long as they're making money, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, two more.
Two more.
We got two more.
Yeah, I got.
Four Corner Sports. Should the UFC force Costa's hand to move to light heavyweight after he came into fight week missing two weight classes? Yeah, I don't think he should ever put pen to paper on a middleweight fight ever again in the UFC. I mean, if he wants to go elsewhere and try to play that game, sure. But what's the point? And let's be honest, at this point, Costa's quickest path to a title is at 205.
Absolutely.
There's not a ton. There are some contenders, no doubt about it, but the line is shorter at 205. So yes, I think this will be the last time we see him at 185. And in my eyes, I know you guys are a little more positive about the situation, but if I truly believe if Costa goes out and gets drubbed tomorrow, it's 50-50 he fights in the UFC again.
And we would be very excited to see Paulo Costa's next fight in Bellator versus Melvin Manhoef or whatever.
There you go.
And he'll be doing the same thing. Hey, I'm making more money over here.
Romero too in Bellator.
Look, I don't know about Force's hand. Like I said, I don't think UFC should force any of his fighters.
Costa's forcing the UFC's hand.
He did this week. But if they, I mean, going forward, they should definitely be telling him, look, your best path to another title shot, your best path to more, you know, main events is maybe stick around to 205. That's probably good for you right now. But I don't think they should or can force him to do anything.
All right. And last question.
Mm-hmm. Any movies you are excited about? 007, No Time to Die, Dune, Halloween. All right. I saw Halloween. I will give my non-spoiler thoughts on Halloween in a matter of moments. But AK, any of these movies excite you? Did you see Dune? Did I hear that?
I just saw Dune last night.
No spoilers.
Okay, I will not spoil it. I will not spoil
it. Great.
Can you give us a titular line though?
I'm a big Batista, former WWE multiple time world champion Batista shows up and just goes, Dune. sorry to spoil. This happens about 2 hours and 35 minutes into the film, but it's worth it. Like when it happens, you're like, the whole theater.
I get it now.
It's all come together. No, I without spoiling, I will say I'm a big Denis Villeneuve fan. I loved Sicario and Blade Runner 2049, all that stuff. Like all this, the Arrival, I loved all that stuff. So I love this movie. I thought it was brilliant. It's very long. And I will say it feels like almost like binge watching three prestige TV episodes in a row. Like it feels like this should have been a TV show, but the scope of it and the look of it has to be on a movie screen. So they're kind of like stuck. Like I don't know if there was a way for them to perfectly do this, because it does feel like this should have been like a 10 episode series with like movie production values, but also it has to be watched on like IMAX. Like I saw it in IMAX to fully appreciate it. So very cool movie. If you really like hard kind of sci-fi and have a lot of patience, you'll really like it. If you're looking for something a little more whiz bang, you might be a little disappointed.
Yeah, I am very excited to see Dune in the theater, and I'm also very excited to see The French Dispatch, Wes Anderson's new film. I will probably see that sometime next week. And No Time to Die and Halloween are kind of the movies I watch when I'm on a plane. So, but
yeah, and before anyone thinks we're a bunch of artsy fartsy soy boys, by the way, I also last movie I watched. Which I proudly, but before anyone says it, Casey.
Okay.
The movie I watched before that was the second Venom movie, which I also enjoyed. So believe me, I'm all over
the place. Oh, you watched the Venom movie? You were that guy?
Well, I love the first one, and I quite enjoyed the second one as well. So I'm all over the place, guys. I love artsy fartsy crap, but I love dumb crap as well. So don't think I'm just like, watch these ponderous, pretentious films. No, I like stupid stuff too. So.
And I also saw Venom 2. I saw Venom 2 on Sunday. It was great.
I heard it.
My kid liked it too.
Was it better than the first one?
I saw bits and pieces of the first one.
Okay.
I really didn't see it. Halloween Kills. I don't know. I got to see the third one to make it make sense. All I'll say, and I'm not giving any spoilers, and this is like, I could say this about any horror movie in the history of horror movies, but I mean this wholeheartedly when I say it. The people of Haddonfield, Illinois, are the dumbest people ever. That's all I'll say. They are dumb. I mean, like they make the Camp Crystal Lake counselors seem like Harvard graduates. These people are idiots, super duper idiots. And that's all I'll say about it. But if you're looking for Michael Myers to just whoop that ass, you'll like it.
Yeah. And the very end, Jamie Lee Curtis goes, Halloween Kills.
Yeah,
just like roll
credit,
and then John Carpenter's Halloween track in the back.
Oh, I see our boy Scott McCrae asking me, did I actually understand? It's a really, he said, did I actually understand Dune? It's actually a really straightforward movie. It's actually not like it's simplified. I haven't read the books, but as far as I know, it simplifies the plot so much. It's not a hard movie to understand. It's just really slow.
All right.
So after you watch the post fight show, make your reservations to go see Dune, okay? So schedule like
it's long.
9:30. We'll see what happens, but then go see a movie, all right? But we got a busy day ahead of us tomorrow. Busy day. Get some sleep. We got to be up early, everybody.
KSW, Marius.
KSW's tomorrow.
Yes. That, and then Ryzen after, even later in the night. Like, good Lord.
So get some rest, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. For Casey, for AK, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Good night, everybody.
Dude! win.
Stop spoiling it.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.